I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live. It's only just a matter of... This is an encore presentation of Susie Larson Live. Welcome to Susie Larson Live. It's always an honor to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan joins me again today to talk about some of your most plaguing health issues, to answer questions about health and the healing process. And I say this every time she's on, but she's fast becoming a world-renowned expert in the areas of mold toxicity and other autoimmune issues. She's both an MD and a functional med doctor, and she's an expert in health and the healing process, and she's a woman of God and a very precious friend to me. So today, we're going to answer questions about the health and healing process, really addressing this load of backlog questions that we have unanswered, text questions that come in that we just can't get to during the live show. Dr. Jill just agreed to connect with me during the off hours to record a show and tackle as many of these as possible. Quick announcement before we hear from Dr. Jill. If you're traveling, we would sure love for you to take us with you. You can download our free and amazing Faith Radio app, and you can live stream the shows from anywhere in the world and catch the podcast after the fact. It's a fantastic app. Just go to the App Store and search Faith Radio Network. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Dr. Jill Carnahan is board certified in both family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. She owns her own practice, Flatiron Functional Medicine, in Louisville, Colorado, and we're blessed to have her with us today. Dr. Jill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Susie. It is always just such a pleasure to be here with you.
Looking forward to the conversation, my friend. And you know this, we love to start every day talking scripture, and I'm wondering if there's a passage you've been pondering these days.
Yes, and I love that question, because there's always just God speaks to me in the morning. And I know I've said this before, but to all you women who are out there feeling like you have to get up and work out and do all that stuff in the morning, the best lesson I've learned in the past 2 years is the stillness, the sitting with God. I get more physically, mentally, emotionally out of this still, quiet time I have in the morning now that I don't run off and do a workout. And again, nothing wrong with that if that's your routine. But I just want to encourage you, if you're feeling the pressure to get up and perform, the biggest, biggest, most profound healing that has occurred in my personal life, health, mentally, physically, emotionally, is letting go of the doing and being in the presence of God. And so much more has happened in my life since I've really, really taken that time in the morning, just amazing miracles. And so the verse that came to me this morning was really related to that. And I think it comes, I was looking back this morning to look at a little history. It's in Psalm 46:5. Many of you women have heard this verse before. It says, God is within her, she will not fail. God will help her at the break of day. And I love that because, you know, the busyness that gets in our lives so often and crowds out all the good. It's when we take scripture and we have had a foundation of lifelong love for God and His Word, we carry that within us. And it doesn't mean we want to neglect reading His Word, but I am so comforted by the fact that I don't have to do a certain quantity of reading or praying or doing. I get to let go of that performance addiction. And I get to just be in His presence and trust that He dwells within me and that His Spirit will guide me. And this verse just totally confirms that in my heart.
Love that so much. Love it so much. And I'm the same way. You know, some people, I mean, we're in the middle of summer here, but I'm just going to mention Christmas. Some people just open all their Christmas presents at once. They kind of glance at one and then open the next one. And I've always been one to open one and just want to sit with it for a while. And I read the Bible very much the same way. There are times when I sit and read, you know, chapter after chapter, a chapter, a whole book of the Bible. But most times I sit with a few verses, I just have to, and let it get into me because it becomes my own, you know? And boy, I just love that so much. Thank you so much for that. All right, so we've got so many here. I'm trying to decide. I've got three piles of pages of questions. So the loaves and fishes have multiplied, let me just tell you that. So, all righty. So here's one. Those who walk through chronic illness face a mental battle that most healthy people would never understand. So why don't you say a word about that, if you would?
Oh, goodness, I love this. Because again, I've been doing functional medicine in this kind of medicine and looking for a root cause of illness for almost 20 years. And I know the physiology and the genetics and the infection and the toxins and all those things that play into it. But what I've seen in the last 5 years is there is a level of complexity in chronic illness that I've never seen before. And part of my question as a good detective is, what is going on and why is this happening and how do we help people heal from these? It seems like it's becoming more and more difficult for people to get well with the stuff that used to work, and also more complex. Even for me as a clinician, there's more layers, there's more things happening, there's more toxicity, there's more stress. So your question about the mental aspect of this is so critical, because what I've seen in breakthroughs in the last, especially more recently with all the complexity, is we have to go to those thought patterns and those belief systems and those things that keep us basically prisoner to our illness. And we really have to address our mental, emotional, spiritual health in order to fully have healing. And I would say that's the piece that I'm understanding now for people who feel stuck or feel like they haven't gotten to where they... And again, I only speak from my own personal experience because I'm God's guinea pig and he always takes me through it. And I remember after the mold, I got to a certain point and I was much, much, much better, but I was still living in fear of another exposure. Or I know you understand this too, Susie, when we've had times where we just crash and can't perform or can't get out of bed, we fear like when there's a little inkling of something that's coming into our lives, like when I would start to feel tired or I'd start to feel, oh no, what's happening? Am I going to go down that road again? And that fear would grip me and it would paralyze me because I knew how badly I felt and how much I literally couldn't function in those times of illness. And so getting to those root causes of patterns and really addressing the roots, because it's fear-based and it's normal. First of all, any of you feeling that, like myself, it's totally normal. Our body, when it has something traumatic, it kind of puts a snapshot, a very burning imprint into our mind, so that whenever we come across something that looks similar, we remember that and we go right to that and feel like it's going to happen again. But the thing that we can do is start to really, first of all, trust that God will take care of us and has healing in our future. And then number two, that this doesn't mean that we're going to go down this terrible path like we did before, just because we start to have some symptoms. And again, that's more than this show, but just knowing those mental patterns and actually being aware of them and then stopping them. You can even say to yourself, stop and reframe, and you can set something else in, like, I will heal, or I health and healing are my future. God has promised healing. And there's several verses. One is, let's see, behold, I will bring to it health and healing. I will heal them and reveal to them an abundance of prosperity and security. So I always grab onto those scriptures when I get stuck in that downward spiral.
This so connects, Jill, with what you just opened the show with being still and knowing that he is God. I feel like if you are dealing with multiple issues in your health, I don't know how you can function as a believer without starting the day by sitting in his presence and getting your marching orders from him and helping him untangle, having him help you untangle some of those things, and then addressing, as you say, some of the fear reactions. And, you and I have talked about this before, but when you have it coming at you and when you have been literally traumatized by not being able to function and some of the stuff that's beyond your control, you call those trauma loops that get formed in your brain, and they make you sensitive to future problems. And there's sometimes it's all involuntary where you're triggered before you realize you're triggered. Yeah. Would you do just us the favor of making the distinction between that and someone, I know a few people in my life who are healthy and jokingly call themselves hypochondriacs, because as soon as they've never had struggles health-wise, but they get a headache, they think it's a tumor, they get a backache, they think it's cancer, and they'll say, I'm a hypochondriac, I always worry about the worst, but it never happens that way. That's so different than someone who's been sick and then suddenly is jarred when symptoms come up. Those are two different things, aren't they?
Oh, I love this. And I'm just meditating and what you're saying, and like, how would God allow me to speak this in truth to people who are listening, and something really clear. It's like if we're on a timeline, I can picture myself right in the middle, and one way is looking to the left, which is our past, and one way is looking to the right, which is our future. God desires for us to stay in presence with him, which means the only moment we have is our moment right now with him, and the things that we have in our life and the physical body, our hands and our feet and our mind and our breath. And in that moment, we have breath and life, and we have every single thing we need in him. But when the thing that you talked about first was those people who look to the future and they run ahead, they look to the right and they look to the future and they look down that timeline and they start to imagine, what if this, what if that, what if this? And it's this imagining, and they're starting to go away from the present into the future and in the fear-based future of what could be, even though it's not yet happened. But it's not based on anything that's actually experiential. It's just their worry and fear. And again, no shame around that, but that's God draws us back to that point where we're right in the center. We're not looking right or left. But then the other side of the coin is the past. And this is like felt in our physical body as a limbic response. So our limbic system basically tags any event in time from our birth all the way till today that has had a high emotional charge. And again, for you and I, we've had high emotional charge when we are in bed, unable to get out of bed and do the things that we need to do because of illness, or we're brain fogged and unable to focus or concentrate, or we're physically in pain or symptoms. And again, you listeners, I'm sure many of you can understand this. There is a real memory and a real experience that has been locked into our brain like a snapshot because it was involved with an emotional charge. Whenever we have an emotional charge, and it could be happy things like the birth of our children, or those things too are emotionally charged. So they get like these frozen snapshots in our limbic system. Some things are beautiful, some things are terrible and traumatic, but all of those emotional charges, if we look to the left on the timeline, they're just like snapshots along the line. And so what happens in the presence, there's some little flicker of like a faded snapshot that reminds us of an old snapshot that we remember, and it brings it all back like it's real. So all of a sudden we see that old snapshot in full color, and we feel like we are living that snapshot, even though all we've had is the tiniest glimmer of a, you know, pain in our finger or something. And I'm making light of that. It's usually more than that, but there might be the slightest inkling that reminds us of that old snapshot, and we look left and we start to think that we are there in that old snapshot. And it's not truth, but it's based on real experience. We know it, we've lived it, we've had that pain and suffering. So God just calls us back to live in that present moment and then really be. And again, we could still be experiencing pain, but the truth is in that present, it's usually a lot better than that memory snapshot that we remember and bring into the present.
Boy, that's so good, because you can see how even the emotions and fear, you know, opens you up to inflammation.
Yes.
So you'll have an inflammatory response.
Yes.
And again, that enemy is just working overtime to confirm your fears, isn't he?
Yes. And Susie, you said something so important there. Did you know that even if we say we're in that present, we're not in danger and we're not really in illness, but we have something that triggers us to be fearful about going back to how painful it was in the past, just by imagining that and imagining that old snapshot, we can create physiological stress changes that cause inflammation and damage to our cells. So just our thought process can take us down one path of healing, which is we trust and we believe and we don't go down the fear path. Or if we start to imagine those old snapshots, we can actually create more inflammation in our bodies.
Wow. We're going to pause here. When we come back, we're going to talk about two things, well, a lot of things, but a couple at the top of my list here. Some long-haul COVID listeners have some questions for you. And then somebody had a smartwatch, and they had some burn marks when they wore it and wondered, are these smartwatches all they're cracked up to be? We'll address those two when we come back. But as Dr. Jill's talking, maybe this is a good idea. In fact, it surely is a good idea. Write down some of your favorite scriptures on healing and memorize them and say them and pray them every day, and even in the morning. You know, he sent forth his word and healed me and rescued me from the grave. Boy, by his stripes I am healed. I'm getting better, stronger every day. Talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan, we're just going through a long list of questions we weren't able to get through on the live show, and we will be back in a moment.
He started something good, and I'm gonna believe.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Susie Larson Live. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan. She's both an MD and a functional med doc, and we get her on whenever we can to talk about health in the healing process. And today, we're actually recording, pre-recording the show, because we have such a backlog of questions we were not able to get to the in the live show, and questions that came in after the fact. We're going to just walk our way through as many of these as possible. So this one came in through online. And this, again, was probably from the last time you were on, probably, you know, a month or two. So things have changed, I'm sure, even since this question came in. So you can adjust however you need. But this listener says, Dr. Fauci has been talking about long-term side effects of COVID. I'm sad and heartbroken. My hubby is a family physician in Oakland, Minnesota. He hasn't even heard of these things. A cousin of mine actually has this long-haul COVID and has been out of work for 6 weeks. This is crazy. I'm not sure who to believe anymore. Infertility, permanent lung and organ damage. This is sad and confusing. What are your thoughts? You're in the news media. What have you heard? And then she says, I've not heard any of this on any regular news, and I'm confused. What do you say, Doc?
Yeah, so those of us who've been doing functional medicine, this is just no surprise, because what we've seen is, I've said this before, I think, on the show, but in functional medicine, that we're looking for root cause, and often in these chronic complex inflammatory conditions, there's two things that are at play. One is a toxic burden of some type, the air quality, the heavy metals, the plastics, the parabens, the phthalates, the mold, et cetera. Those are toxins in our environment, and they can come through ingestion or air quality or water, et cetera. The other side of that that often contributes to chronic illness is infection. So again, in functional medicine, we've been dealing with infections as a root cause of autoimmunity, of inflammation, of chronic fatigue, of chronic disability and illness for a very long time. And what I've seen over the years is viruses of many types, cytomegaly virus, Epstein-Barr virus, herpetic viruses, and many others, Coxsackie. We know that these viruses, what happens is we get a virus like chickenpox as a child, and it stays, once we get over that initial infection, it stays dormant in our system. And as long as we have a strong, robust immune system, it's not really bothering or causing us symptoms. But say we have a surgery or a lack of sleep or a stressful event, we can get shingles, which is simply reactivation of that old virus later on in life. So all that to frame COVID. COVID's a virus. No surprise that in some people it creates a long-term inflammatory response, because infections of any type, especially viruses, can do that. Now, COVID happens to be very virulent, meaning people can catch it. It's very contagious, more than a lot of other viruses. It also happens to be an incredibly potent stimulator of an inflammatory immune response, probably more than anything I've ever seen. So knowing those two facts, knowing the facts about how infections work, it is not a surprise at all, even if it's not being talked about, that there's something called long hauler syndrome, because we've seen a similar type of thing with other viruses in the past. This is kind of not a new shocking thing. However, like I said, the virus itself is such an inflammatory trigger that I think the intensity and the amount of people that are suffering from post-COVID types of symptoms is greater than many of these other types of viruses. So I believe it's absolutely real. I see patients all the time that are having sequelae after that fact. And part of this is their own immune response. If it's robust and able to keep those old viruses in check or to stop or halt that inflammatory immune response to the virus, then patients can get well and recover. And if you'd like me, Susie, to talk about some things that might be helpful, I'm happy to do that.
Please do, yes.
Okay. So again, what we're dealing with, it's not really the virus. The virus is a trigger. So it's like, it's something I always think about, you know, I have a sleeping bear hibernating and you poke the bear and it might be kind of angry. It might kind of growl or come after you. It's like that with the immune system. This virus tends to be a very potent stimulator of the immune system. So often this long hauler symptoms, or even while you're ill with COVID acutely, the symptoms that we have are more related to our profound immune response to the virus. So the things that would help the person to feel better, either during COVID or after COVID, would be things relating to calming that inflammatory response. So I'm a huge fan of basic nutrients like zinc and vitamin C and vitamin D, glutathione, N-acetylcysteine. Those are all core kind of nutrients that support the immune system and support our innate immunity. And then some things that actually calm an inflammatory response are boswellia or frankincense. Chinese skullcap is very powerful. Turmeric or curcumin. And so sometimes we'll use these things. And then there's a whole other pathway with histamine and mast cells that can be involved with COVID. So things like quercetin or other natural antihistamines like stinging nettles can be really helpful as well.
Boy, that is so, so helpful. I appreciate that so much. All right, this one. I was wearing a smart watch. I'm trying not to, similar to a Fitbit. Loved it. However, after about three weeks, I developed burn marks where the infrared lights on the backside of the watch were monitoring my heart rate. I started researching and learned that EMF radiation is dangerous and the constant contact from these devices with our bodies builds up over time. It started me thinking about all Bluetooth wireless items we use regularly. Wonder if there's any correlation between that and the rise of brain cancer, tumors, and other cancers. I'm very sad because I love the information the watch provided. What are your thoughts about fitness trackers? Are they safe to use?
Yeah, so this is another thing like with a toxic load in our environment. This is part of a toxic load that's invisible. It's on the light spectrum. And so whether it's like X-ray radiation, which is very, very potent and powerful and strong, down to like microwaves and even red light or the spectrum of light, those are like all spectrums of electromagnetic radiation. So we are all constantly bombarded. Even the sunlight has electromagnetic radiation. So this isn't just like a technology thing. But what's happened in the last several years is as we like our, even me in my house, my condo, I have these automatic shades where I just pick up a button, a remote control, and I can open and close the shades in my condo. And that's all done by Bluetooth wireless. Same with my thermostat now is wireless. There's so many things. And what you're talking about is watches and devices that track your heart rate, your respiration, et cetera, even our phones. So what is happening is there's a much more concentration of these things in our homes because we like the convenience of them. And then when they're on our skin or really close to our bodies, the distance from our body really does make a difference. So there's so much more of that. And what happens is if we have a chronic state of inflammation or underlying infections or mold toxicity, we often tend to be more sensitive to this electromagnetic radiation. So then we can tell if we're by our router in our house, by the computer. One of the ways to get around that is to hardwire your computer, which we all did in the old days. And now it seems so strange, but it's pretty easy to hardwire your house and actually have a line that goes into your computer instead of using Wi-Fi. With your router, I'm sitting right beside my router, but I actually have a router cover, so it shields a lot of that radiation from me since I'm sitting right next to it. You can do a master switch where the electricity in just your bedroom is turned off at night because a lot of times there's dirty electricity in the area where you're sleeping. So there's things you can do. And then you're mentioning these Fitbits and watch and different things, devices that we wear. I have a ring that does the same thing. You can, most of these devices, you can turn off the Bluetooth signal at night so that at least for the 8 hours you're sleeping at night, you're not getting the Bluetooth. But I do think for those who are sensitive, every little bit of Bluetooth and every little bit, not just Bluetooth, but every little bit of EMF radiation can affect the health, and especially as we have more concentration. A resource for most of you, if you look up for a building biologist in your town or city, that's a training that people can have. We have one in our city that I use and refer patients to, where they can actually come into your house and measure the magnetic and electro frequencies and see, like for me, they came in and checked while I was lying on my bed the amount of hertz that were going to my body, and they made recommendations specifically like covering my router or turning off the electricity in the bedroom at night to decrease the exposure to that for me.
Wow, fascinating. Wow. All right, when we come back, we'll answer a host of other questions. Here's one, where to find the best list of foods for a histamine restriction diet? And maybe we'll preface that question with, what is histamine intolerance? Many people have been complaining about allergies this year. Might you have a histamine intolerance? You might. We'll talk more with Dr. Jill about that next. This is an encore presentation of Suzy Larson Live. Keep on walking. You always make a way when the storm is raging. No matter what I'm facing, I count on you. Miracles happen when you move. Had to wait for that line. Miracles happen when you move God. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan, who joins us whenever we can get her. And today we're actually recording this show, and I'm telling you that because we have a backlog of questions that came in during the live show we just couldn't get to. And I know we have more questions than time, but we're going to just pick them off one by one. And Dr. Jill, let's start by this. This question came in from Michelle about where to find the best list of foods for histamine restriction diet. But I think before you answer that, or while you answer that, for those who don't know what histamine intolerance is, especially I've heard more complaints these days about histamine issues. And I know we've had a massively high pollen count in Minneapolis, St. Paul here, but mm-hmm. I sometimes think there's more at play with some of these people that I'm listening to. So what do you say?
Yeah, so let's describe the problem and then we'll go into the diet, because many of you, this was interesting for me. If I go way, way back, I started naturally avoiding high histamine foods and didn't know why. And I'll tell you what those are in just a minute or so. But now that I know, it makes so much sense, because me personally, I've really benefited from a low histamine diet. So first of all, what is histamine? So our mast cells are these cells that are primordial. They're kind of early. They don't have a lot of differentiation, but they help us protect us against infections and allergens and things. And when they get irritated, they will throw out excess histamine, among other things. They may also throw out things like prostaglandins and really tons of chemicals that create permeability, so like mucus and inflammation and congestion. And they also create inflammation and allergies, kind of an allergic response. Now, we might think of congestion and sneezing as the only things, but this histamine can affect pretty much every organ in the body, from the brain to the heart. It can make your heart race and beat faster. It can make your gut more permeable, and it could cause diarrhea or some abdominal pain or even heartburn. It could cause anxiety, so even mental symptoms, insomnia. It can cause agitation. It can cause just all over the body. This affects us. It can cause rashes. The skin is loaded with mast cells, so often we'll have weird rashes or itching that has no rash or symptoms on the skin. So this histamine acts all over the place, and it's not just sneezing or congestion. And the reason I give you this framework is because now in our world, whether it's more EMF radiation, more mold in our environment, more toxic chemicals, more infections, all of these things can irritate or trigger our mast cells to produce more histamine. So it is becoming a bigger issue, because there seems to be more toxic load and infections that are triggering even a person who didn't really have an issue in the past to have histamine issues in the future or current. So that's the framework. And histamine is just a chemical messenger in our body that should be a protector. In fact, Susie, this is a very cool little known fact. Like I said, I'm sensitive to histamine. I've been high histamine my whole life. There's an advantage to histamine, and this is going to surprise some people. Histamine helps us be creative and very focused, and there's actually studies that correlate higher histamine to higher IQ. So not that's just crazy to
I
me.
I must be
but not
brilliant.
All lost.
Yeah,
I know. No, I know. I'm like, okay, well, this I've got to grab onto this, because sometimes
right.
It doesn't feel so good.
Exactly.
This is why, if you guys have ever, if you're out there listening, taking a Benadryl or an antihistamine, you might know this. You feel kind of foggy or sluggish or just not quite as bright. That's because your histamine has been lowered by the antihistamine. So all that to say, we have mechanisms to break down histamine in our bodies, and then we have mechanisms to take it in with food or beverage or whatever, and then we can produce it. So if these are out of line, like say we have genetics that help are impaired for the breakdown of histamine, and then we're ingesting a lot of histamine, and then we have more stimulation of histamine, that's like a triple-fold increase. So one of the ways that we have control over this is the histamine in our diet. And that's where the first question, the original question was asking, what do we do about this? So often a low histamine diet can be helpful. And there is original, she unfortunately passed away, but her website is still there. The Histamine Chef was a great, great source of really good information. And on my blog, all free information, just jillcarnahan.com. If you search for mast cell or histamine, I probably have a half a dozen articles on this topic as well that are free. You can go on there and look at those. So those are some good resources. But the basics are, when you have a protein, so say a meat or something made of protein, and it sits and starts to degrade, the proteins, when they degrade, they create more histamine. So leftovers, things that are fermented, things that are like a smoked, like a meat that's smoked or a jerky or dried, those are all going to have a higher histamine. So if you eat fresh caught, fresh frozen fish, it's going to be lower histamine than if a fish has sat in the display case at your local grocery store for 3 days, or if you have a 3 or 4 or 5 day leftover meal, those are going to be higher in histamine. And histamine, things like yogurts and kefirs and kombucha and bone broth, all these really healthy foods for the gut, they are high histamine. So beware. So things that you may not think about can also be culprits.
Is almond yogurt also a histamine food?
So what I find is, because I'm real sensitive to these, I find yogurts like almond and coconut I can usually tolerate, but some of the longer ferments and the dairy-based ferments or the kefirs and kombuchas or sauerkrauts, or those are a little bit higher. So the longer it's fermented, the worse. I think some of those are moderately okay with the yogurts.
Wow. Okay. And how about, I thought red sauces were also high histamine.
Yeah, so tomatoes and sauces, citrus fruits, chocolate, sorry guys, I know that's a big one often, and then sometimes peanuts, tomatoes, vinegars. So this is where, like, I remember way long ago, I knew salad dressings, vinegars, marinades, and sauces. Whenever I go out to eat, those were the culprits because they would often contain hidden gluten, hidden dairy, or ferments or vinegars. And I started just asking for my dishes, my meals without the sauces, the marinades, and the dressings, and I did so good. So you might, if you're not sure what's bothering you, just be very aware, especially if you're eating out, of the sauces, the marinades, and the dressings, because they often contain hidden things that can cause issues with histamine.
Wow, appreciate that. Okay, here's one. I have a brother-in-law who started fasting for both spiritual and physical reasons. He doesn't eat all day, and then at night has a lean green dinner, a big one. He's losing weight fast, feels great. Is this sustainable? Is this healthy? What do you say?
So intermittent, first of all, from a spiritual perspective, I mean, God, all over his word, is there's reason for spiritual fasting. And Susie, you could speak to it much better than I, but from my limited experience, I know that God just often takes away that the food, when we're taking that hunger and desire away, when we are hungry or fasting, we're devoting all of that energy towards him and to hearing from him and to really focusing. So that in and of itself, I think, can be beautiful. But no surprise, a lot of the things that he instructs, even in the old Levitical law, are beneficial for us. Surprise, surprise. And fasting is no different. When we look at the studies for things that actually help us stay young and healthy and stop the aging process or limit the aging process, fasting is probably one of the best evidence-based practices for reducing the quickness at which we age, our cells age. So there is benefit. Now, the listener mentioned the weight loss and stuff. And what happens often with fasting is we switch from burning sugar to burning fat, which is called ketosis. It's actually a very efficient way to maintain energy. But when we're in ketosis, we tend to burn fat. And if you're not getting enough calories, you can use it for a weight loss strategy. But if someone's losing weight too quickly, they should probably add more carbohydrates and they could still do the fast, but they would not lose weight so quickly.
Interesting. All right. This one maybe has more to do with the histamine question. I just saw it. Jenny says, my allergies cause fluid to build up in my ears and they feel like they're going to burst. I take allergy meds and antihistamines for it. A lot of times it seems my acid reflux flares up. Why is this and what can I do?
Oh, gosh, you just totally described the histamine response, because I mentioned many people don't know the acid reflux is a sign. In fact, I started noticing when there was a subset of population of patients that they'd go into a moldy home, all of a sudden they get heartburn. It's like, what in the world? And then I realized that's a histamine response. So for some people, that heartburn, that reflux, yeah, you never would have thought of it, is a histamine response. So, and the fluid buildup, like I said, cells become more permeable or leaky when you get histamine. And that could be like the blood-brain barrier. You have leaky brain, the mitochondria, which produce our energy, leaky mitochondria, your gut. And then all of a sudden you have more food sensitivities or more gut issues. And the same thing with your ears and your mucous membranes. When they become more permeable, the fluid leaks out. And that pressure that you're feeling in your ears is just that permeability that has been stimulated by the histamine. So what I'd recommend is, first of all, if there is a trigger like an allergen in the environment or a food, try to find and discover those triggers, because then you could stop it from happening in the first place. But the second thing would be to use antihistamines. And even though I love the natural substances like quercetin and nettles, In this case, I would probably recommend an over-the-counter antihistamine. Benadryl is pretty strong, but Zyrtec and Claritin and Allegra and all of those kinds of other antihistamines can work equally well. And you can use an H1 and an H2 blocker, and you could add Zantac in the short term, which is a different type of histamine blocker.
All right. Wendy says, I have a question about acidity. I feel like if I like to have a little more coffee than normal, would apple cider vinegar be a good thing to ingest in order to bring my acidity back to more alkaline? What do you say?
So of all the vinegars, we just got to talking about histamine. I do find apple cider vinegar is the best tolerated. But for someone with histamine issues, they still might have some triggering with apple cider vinegar. So just be aware of how you feel with that. And if you don't feel well, just because it's supposed to be a good health food, don't take it. What I'd recommend instead, which is what I do every single morning, is I get up, have a large glass of water with a fresh squeezed lemon. That's a great way to alkalinize your body. And as long as you tolerate lemons, it's delicious and super alkalinizing. And I would actually recommend that over apple cider vinegar.
I heard that if you take room temperature water with lemon in the morning with your milk thistle supplement, that it just like it kind of super boosts the impact of the milk thistle with kind of detoxing your kidneys and liver or something like that. Is that have you heard anything like that?
That makes a lot of sense, Susie, because what that'll do is anytime you're alkalinizing, which is what the lemon juice does, all of the enzyme processes in your body for detox work better. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Interesting. One more question before our next break. John says, my wife developed tinnitus after her second vaccine. Can this be a side effect or is this something else?
The last word you cut out. Can you just say that again, Susie?
You bet. My wife developed tinnitus after the second vaccine dose. Can this be a side effect or maybe something else?
Got it. Okay. What I've seen, basically COVID, we got done talking about that in the beginning of how inflammatory it is. So when we're dealing with a vaccine, we want the body's immune system to respond with these antibodies. So with the vaccine, its intent is to poke and trigger the immune system, just like that's exactly what it's supposed to do. So there's nothing wrong with that. However, that poking and stimulating immune system, especially if someone already has kind of an inflammatory immune system, can create side effects that look kind of like the COVID. And in this case, tinnitus, the ringing in her ears, may be somewhat of an immune inflammatory response. What I've seen is there's a subset that majority of people get the vaccine, do great, no problems. And there's a few people, just like the long haulers with COVID, that have a little bit of sequelae that drags on. And it's usually related to an overactive immune system. So most of the stuff I talked about in the beginning of the show, one in particular, ginkgo, can be helpful for tinnitus. And it's pretty benign and you can get it over the counter. You might try that for tinnitus.
All right, we're going to pause here. When we come back, we'll keep plugging away at these questions, talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan today. It's so fun when we've got her live because I love seeing the questions come in on the text line, but we had so many last time that we're just wanting to do you a great favor and tackle some of these that got missed last time. So more with Dr. Jill in a moment. You're listening to an encore presentation of Susie Larson Live. Thanks so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live, having a great conversation, as always, with our friend, Dr. Jill Carnahan. She's both an MD and a functional med doc, so I'd love that we get best of both worlds from this dear gal. And we're just tackling a whole backlog of questions we weren't able to get to in the live show. And here's one from Amy. She says, I've been physically fit my whole life, participating in sports, running, strength training into adulthood. Always loved exercise. I think I was at my fittest and healthiest at 40 years old. I'm now 45. At 42, I experienced some emotional trauma, and I stopped working out. Within the last year, I've been trying to return to regular exercise, but after I do anything close to what I used to do in recovery, I feel like I'm coming down with something, or muscle soreness is more intense than it used to be, which makes exercising less enjoyable and less consistent than I'd like it to be. Wondering how I can help myself. I did start taking an adaptogen supplement. I don't think I'm saying that right, but what do you say?
Yeah, and you said it perfectly.
Yay!
What you're describing. Yes. So, and what was the listener's name?
Amy.
Amy. So, Amy, what you're describing is post-exertional fatigue or malaise. It's actually part of the definition of chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, I am not one that likes labels, and chronic fatigue syndrome, while it is absolutely 100% real, people experience it and are diagnosed with it, usually there is an underlying root cause. So it's not just a description of the fatigue, but there's some other infection or toxin or whatever that's contributing to that. And this is no different, but that is a classical symptom of that people experience. I'm sure there's other listeners out there that are hearing this and understanding the same thing. So what you might do is you might do a two-hour hike, and you pay for it the next several days because you're so exhausted from that experience. So this is usually a mitochondrial issue or an adrenal issue or both. Mitochondria are those little things inside every single cell in your body that make energy or produce ATP, and they can be affected by infection or toxin or a lot of the stuff we've already talked about. So it sounds simple, like, oh, well, it's a mitochondrial issue. Let's just give mitochondrial support. But the truth is it can be more complex than that. The other thing you mentioned, adaptogens, can be real supportive for adrenals. Adrenals are little glands that sit on top of our kidneys, and they produce cortisol and mineralocorticoids, and they help our energy and stamina and response to stress. And it sounds like from what you described, there was definitely a stressor that contributed to this change in your response to exercise. So what I would do is, first of all, I love this phrase. Sometimes I write it on a prescription pad for patients, and it's be kind to yourself. Because so often we're pushing ourselves so hard, and that really doesn't help. And we feel like we should or we must do something. Those are always red flags for should and must are those things that we're kind of stuck in that pattern of having to do. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not being kind to ourselves. So the first thing, Amy, is just be kind to yourself. And if you feel like you need a break, let yourself have that break. And what you could do is find out what is the threshold. Like maybe it's a half a mile walk, and no jogging or hiking, or there's going to be a threshold to where you don't feel that fatigue. And what I would do, whether it's movement, breath work, walking, hiking, something gentle would be excellent. Movement is always good. And most everybody can find some sort of movement they can still do without that resulting fatigue. So I would find the pattern of movement you can continue without pushing yourself past that point. And then find with your doctor some mitochondrial support. There's so many things. I'll just list a few. Coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, R-lipoic acid, beet juice or nitric oxide precursors, basic B vitamins, zinc, magnesium, all kinds of different things you can do to support the mitochondria. But typically, just taking a mitochondrial support won't reverse that. So you have to be kind to yourself and patient with the process as well.
Wow, very good. Cheryl says, I'm a 60-year-old woman who was diagnosed with hypothyroidism about 30 years ago. Knowing what I know now, I was not experiencing any symptoms of hypothyroidism at the time of the diagnosis. I wasn't fatigued, didn't have dry skin, and was not gaining weight. I've been reading about adaptogens and helping thyroid functions. Is there any way to get off levothyroxine? Yep. And onto a more holistic path to treat hypothyroidism?
So great question. So you can have an autoimmune thyroiditis where your body has created antibodies to your thyroid and it starts to attack. And early in that process, you still have quite a bit of thyroid function. But late in the process, your thyroid gets damaged. It's kind of like arterial firing of the thyroid and you start to, you know, lose function. And at some point, you can lose enough function that you probably do need a thyroid replacement and you're not going to be able to produce enough thyroid hormone without that. Now, the question is, where are you at in that process? And that would be up to you and your doctor to determine. Typically with thyroid, if you go off of it, your TSH will rise and you won't produce enough thyroid hormone on your own. And again, that's something you would absolutely need to work with your doctor on, because I would not advise at all stopping thyroid hormone without a doctor to help you, because going back into hypothyroid could be serious. What you could do is have a doctor look at your levels and, in conjunction with consultation, decide if it's appropriate to try decreasing your dose and then rechecking your levels, because I have seen many, many patients able to decrease dose or use adaptogenic herbs to support the thyroid function. But that's a pretty complex question to answer here without your doctor's intervention and help.
Appreciate that. Okay, Karen says, is it possible to eat too much protein? With the popularity of keto products, I eat a lot of protein, but I cannot lose weight.
Oh, bingo. This is such a great question because I bet some of you are also listening and saying, yeah, that's me too. So first of all, you mentioned keto diet. Keto diet is fats, not protein. And protein and sugars will convert to sugar. So if you have very low carb, moderate or high protein, and you have too much protein, you're going to convert that protein to sugar and sabotage your ketosis. So if you really want a keto diet, you need a very high fat and you don't want a lot of protein because you will sabotage your ability to burn fat. And again, that's just a ketogenic diet. It doesn't mean that an average healthy diet doesn't need to include protein. But if your keto diet includes too much protein, absolutely 100% you will gain weight and not lose weight because you're converting that protein to sugar. And what you want in a keto diet is you want to burn fat and you want to limit the sugar. So I think of it as very low carb, moderate protein, and high fat. And I'm talking like in the ketogenic diet, maybe 80% fat, which I think is hard to sustain because there's not that many like delicious sources of fat just to snack on. So it can be done. People do it all the time. It's not. And the other thing about it is to limit the carbs and to get into ketosis. A lot of people have to reduce plant-based things like leafy greens and fruits and vegetables to some extent. And I feel like those should be part of a healthy diet. So I'm not a huge fan of long-term 80% fat or more, unless you have a seizure disorder or neurological condition that requires a ketogenic diet long-term. So yes, the bottom line is you can have too much protein and sabotage your ability to lose weight.
So how about when you look at your client list and those who do well, have you noticed common denominators in those who seem to prevail over hardship and sickness, chronic illness? You know what I mean? If you were to line them all up, say these are some common denominators, what would they be?
Yes. Gosh, this is back to spiritual and beliefs. And, you know, depending on where they come from, doesn't necessarily have the same belief system as I do. But the truth is, you have to believe in the ability that you have, that you can, that you will be able to overcome. Because often that hopelessness and the getting stuck, we talked about the pattern of looking back to the old photographs or the old memories. If you get stuck in that pattern of fear, fear is going to sabotage. But if you're able to overcome that fear and believe that there's hope and there's healing and believe in God's provision in your body to overcome, that's one of the things that makes all the difference, is that belief in the ability to overcome.
All right. What does Dr. Jill think of decaf coffee as a way to cut out caffeine? Because I still love coffee in the morning. What do you say?
Yeah. So the processing of the coffee does make a difference. So you can get kind of a cold processing of the decaf and some less toxic ways. And then, of course, the quality of your coffee. I think that's a great idea. If I had to choose between decaf and green tea, I would probably encourage you to do green tea because there's so much more antioxidants in that versus decaf coffee.
All right. Almost ready to wrap this up. But any suggestions for treating depression in my 85-year-old mom who will not take antidepressants? She's tried several, said the side effects weren't worth it, but she's definitely depressed. I really want to help her somehow.
Yeah, so serotonin is one of the chemicals that we naturally make from foods and just from our neurochemistry that helps with mood. And there's lots of precursors you can take to try to see if that will help. First of all, you need vitamin B6 and magnesium as cofactors. So making sure you have a good B-complex and magnesium would be core. And then 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, or tryptophan itself, those are two nutrients. They're amino acids that are precursors. So often I'll give people those two in addition to a B vitamin, magnesium, and that will help with mood. If there's anxiety component, I will sometimes use GABA or theanine. And then just tryptophan-rich foods, which are like turkey and some of those things we have at Thanksgiving, can also be helpful.
Very good. You're so efficient. I'm going to throw one more in here. All right. Our journey toward health is not a straight line. It's filled with highs, lows, twists, and turns. Speak to the need for grace and patience and endurance.
So true, my dear listener, because this is my journey. I know so many of you listening out there. And even though I've overcome so much and have so many good days, there's still days. I just had one last Saturday where I was tired and crashed. And I had the moment where I was like, oh no, is something bad happening? And of course, I was fine. But it's very easy to get discouraged when you're in the midst of one of those little setbacks. And I think the real important thing is to remember how far you've come and to look back and see the progress that you've made. Because often we look back and see, oh my goodness, I'm so much better than I used to be. And that's always encouraging.
What do you know about God now, Jill, that you didn't know 5 years ago?
Oh, the goodness of God is so much greater. His love is so much deeper, and his ability to transform and heal and show us miracles every day is just beyond our comprehension. I've experienced many miracles in my life, and sometimes I felt like, oh, maybe I only get a certain allotment of miracles, which is silly. But I now just, I believe in the impossible because my God is a God of the impossible. And the more I just trust him and believe in the impossible, the more I see it every single day.
I love you. Thank you for this time.
I love you too.
You're amazing, and I pray for you often. What you're doing for the kingdom and for the world is so significant, and thank you for this time. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Susie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure pray you found some encouragement here today. Hope we got some of your questions answered as well. Remember, every single step towards health and healing matters. You can make a tweak today, and it will make a difference in the long haul. I will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Susie Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.